You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network. PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Alert, alert, clear all channels.
Fresh from America's Dairyland,
ladies and gentlemen.
From the Benches Podcast.
From the Benches with Ross Uglum and Ryan Hilsland.
Hello and welcome back to From the Benches. We apologize for our two-week absence, and all that I'll say about that is that it was my partner Ryan Hilsland's fault. Ryan, how are you?
Pretty good. I didn't really feel like talking about that game last week after it happened. And so we put it off on Sunday, post-game, and then our schedules didn't work out for the rest of the week.
Yeah, of course, just giving Ryan a hard time. We did have a little scheduling conflict that didn't let us get together, and I honestly didn't want to talk about that game badly enough to find a guest host. So we apologize for the From the Benches absence. And we're going to go ahead and hit it hard after another loss here to the Carolina Panthers following the loss to the Denver Broncos a week ago today. Green Bay falls to 6-2 on the season. Obviously, having played 8 games, that means that they are at the halfway point, well on their way to another 12-4 finish. I guess we kind of talked about this maybe being a 13-3 team, but right now, that's not the direction they're trending. They'd have to have a hell of a second half to pull that off. Ryan, any adjustments? I guess we'll talk about it a little bit later on, but any adjustments to your optimism with this team?
Yeah. I mean, you have to think. I said pretty firmly that I thought it'd be a 13-3 team at the end of the season. That was assuming we would lose 2 of 3 out of Denver, Carolina, and Arizona. Obviously, 2 of those losses have already happened. So to predict going forward that the that they would only lose 1 game, I think that's probably unlikely. So I'll say 12-4 is probably the most likely scenario now after 2 underwhelming weeks. But I do still feel relatively optimistic about the team. The 2 weeks, obviously, they're tough to watch. Bookended back to back. But I still think they're a good team. I think they can overcome this. I saw things in the game today against Carolina in the second half that gave me reason for optimism at least a little bit. So I'll amend my official prediction to 12-4, but I'm still feeling relatively good about the team.
Yeah, one thing to talk about with this season, obviously, is injuries. It seems to be something that isn't going away. Green Bay lost Quentin Rollins and Sam Shields in the Denver game. Clay Matthews got nicked up. He didn't look to be quite himself today. Didn't look to be hobbled either. It just wasn't a great Clay game. He's been much more disruptive this season before the bye than he was today. Hopefully he comes into the Detroit game next week feeling a little bit fresher on that ankle. As far as today's injuries are concerned, nothing on the offensive side of the ball that I can remember. They did lose Casey Hayward to a possible concussion. I guess Eddie Lacy has now fighting a groin, and we'll talk about Eddie in a bit. It might just be time to, I don't know if shut him down is the right word, but just give him a couple weeks off. Maybe he's out of shape. Maybe he's hurt, but he's not playing well. Besides the Hayward possible concussion, the Packers did not suffer any injuries, so that's got to be a positive, I guess, going forward. Ryan, this defense after, well, technically after the bye, but it was actually after Week 7's games, was the number one scoring defense in all of football. And obviously, you know, you can say small sample size, but it was a six-game sample size, which is, you know, over a third of the season. And there were legitimate reasons for the improvement. You know, the placing of Matthews in the defense, the subtraction of Brad Jones and A.J. Hawk, and the addition of Quentin Rollins and Demaryius Randall is real solid contributors to the secondary. In my opinion, just had the team playing a little bit better. You add into that the emergence of Dayton Jones and Nick Perry playing a little bit more like their pedigree. And we thought that was a unit that, you know, we have real reason to have a ton of optimism about. What do you think the problem is? And then I'll kind of follow it with some of my thoughts.
Well, I think you see a little bit of a regression back to some of the inconsistencies we've seen in previous years. When we talked about the defense turning around and turning that corner a few weeks ago, it was because, like you said, Nick Perry and Dayton Jones had stepped up. Mike Daniels was playing at a really consistently high level. The secondary had been playing pretty well. And, you know, then the Charger game happened, and I wasn't ready to write the defense off. I thought there were obviously I talked about the reasons I wasn't that concerned. Then the Denver game happens. Peyton Manning, in the middle of a pretty bad season by his standards, comes in, and that offense puts up 500 plus yards on the Packers for the second straight week. I think you're just seeing those inconsistencies start happening again. You know, you miss plays here and there in the secondary. You're not getting a consistent pass rush, and you know, there were things in the running game that I think were positive in the early parts of the Denver game. There was penetration happening in the run game. Daniels and Jones and Matthews were in the backfield, but the Denver tailbacks were just kind of slipping a tackle and then turning it into a big gain. I think that improved a little bit in the second half, but obviously a lot of the damage had been done already. The secondary was not playing great at that point. And then, you know, I think the run defense looked okay in the game against Carolina today. Newton had some big plays, but I think I give a little bit of credit to Capers for adjusting to Cam's running threat after the early parts of that game. And then, you know, Stewart had some gains, but I think the run defense played relatively well. But you're kind of just going back and forth. You know, you see the run game playing well for a couple series, and then Jonathan Stewart busts off, you know, a 12-yard game to pick up a first down. Cam Newton scrambles for something, and you're just not seeing it consistently over the last couple weeks when you were over the early part of the season when we thought the defense had turned a corner. Turns out we may have spoke a little too soon on that. I think the talent on the defense is still there. Obviously, all the injuries to the cornerbacks are not helping. Dimitri Goodson and Gunter did not have very good games today, but that's to be expected and basically their first big game experience. But against a wide receiver crew that's not all that talented, you hope that they would they'd be able to hold their ground a little bit more, and they just didn't. I think the run game showed, the run defense showed some flashes today, and the cornerbacks kind of got exposed. With all those injuries, it's kind of tough to watch, but I guess you kind of expect it to happen to a degree.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is, I guess it really sucks to talk about because I've made fun of these people for so long, and really, I'm a guy that generally, you know, will blame personnel before I'll blame coaching, but I just have some issues with the way the Capers called this game, and I guess the way that, you know, we've lost so many big games under Capers with the three-man rush. There was...
Oh, man.
It's not a...
One of the worst ones I've seen today.
Yeah.
Just to give up that big play with a three-man rush after two big defensive plays that early in the game, that really set the tone. Giving up that big play on a big third down, that gave Carolina a ton of confidence on offense, and the defense took basically an entire half to come back from that big blow.
Absolutely. And it just, like I said, I mean, that's a 3rd and 18. You're up 7-3. The ball's deep in Carolina territory. Your offense is probably going to get the ball back in a pretty good spot, and you give up 59 yards, and all of a sudden it's 10-7. If you blitz in that situation, you know, you're more than likely just going to have Cam whistle a pass over someone's head. Worst case scenario, he gets it out hot to Greg Olsen. Greg Olsen picks up 8, 9, 11 yards, and they still punt. But that three-man rush, cover three zone that they were playing, you know, with HaHa not wanting to concede the middle of the field, he can't really come up in case someone goes back behind his head. But, I mean, at the same time, he was 40 yards downfield. He probably should have just taken Cotchery. But the conservative nature of Capers when he gets the advantage is just frustrating. And it's the same old
Absolutely.
Stuff. And, you know, whether it's how we play defense with the lead or how we play defense when we've got the opposition, you know, at a disadvantage, like I just said, whether, you know, a third and long situation, a situation in which you would expect the opposition to have a very low conversion rate. And maybe, obviously, it's just a recency thing. And maybe at the same time, too, it's because those plays are so impactful at the game, or, you know, so impactful towards the game, that I think, you know, being a fan, I guess you see those plays and they stick out. So maybe our conversion rate isn't any worse than anybody else's, but I think that's probably not the case. I mean, I think the Capers really does struggle in those situations. I think he goes conservative, and you can't give, even if you have eight guys covering, you can't give an NFL receiving core 7 seconds to get open, because they will. I mean, you can't cover that long, or you can't cover five guys that long, or four guys. I don't know if they had a guy in protecting Newton or not, but, you know, it's not possible to cover for that long, and we've seen that before. The other thing, too, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, is just personnel stuff. Nate Palmer's not the answer. That's hopefully been solved by Jake Ryan, and Dimitri Goodson is definitely not the answer. You talked about Gunter, and his problems are actually on special teams. I'd be surprised to see if he got a lot of run in the actual defense. It seemed like they were pretty okay with Meech playing outside corner, and if you're going to get beat up on by Carolina's receivers, you're going to get beat up on by a lot of receivers. So it's going to be important to get Sam back sooner rather than later. Getting Q back wouldn't hurt too. I actually, after, you know, watching Gunter in the preseason, I have no problem with him playing outside corner. I think he's a heck of a player. Granted, that might be, you know, against, as Bill Johnson would say, a bunch of guys named Dave. But at the same time, you know, as far as I'm concerned, once you exhibit a skill, you own it. And his ability to shut down shorter routes and make, you know, guys try to beat him over the top, that'd be really big, because right now, with as much as Capers blitzes, those hot slants are part of what's killing this team. And Gunter's a kind of guy with his size and his ability to jam at the line that isn't going to let that kind of thing happen. Ryan, let's dive behind the benches briefly here and talk about Eddie Lacy. He's a guy both you and I love. You actually named your dog after him. And to be blunt, it's just been awful this season. And I say it's and not he, because I'm not actually convinced that he's got a lot of holes to run through. But at the same time, it's the same five guys blocking for James Starks, and he's just been infinitely more effective than Lacy. Ryan, what do you think's going on with Eddie, and do you think it can be fixed by the time the season's over?
Yeah, it's hard to pin down what the problem is, but it's tough to watch. Like you said, he's one of my favorite players after his first two seasons. I thought the sky was the limit for him, but it's kind of come crashing down this season. I'm most likely going to lose a fantasy matchup because he was my first round pick. He had -1 point, and I'm going to probably lose by 4 or 5. So that it's tough to watch him be so ineffective. And then while he's doing that, to go out and lose a fumble, it's tough. I was hoping that, having a little time to get over the injury would help. Doesn't appear that really made a difference. The last 2 weeks have been up against two pretty good defenses, two pretty good defensive fronts. In the league in Kuechly and Davis. But like you said, James Starks has been much more effective behind the same run blockers. And I don't really know how to pinpoint what the problem is. Obviously, the run blocking has not been great. The offensive line didn't play very good at all today. Even my guy, Josh Sitton, after he gave up an uncharacteristic sack a couple weeks ago, had two really bad pass protection moments, and I don't really know why it's happening. You'd think a guy like Sitton, who's been so established and been so good, would kind of just keep it rolling, and you wonder why that appears to be a problem, but it's carrying over to Eddie Lacy's performance. Starts to show a little bit more of an ability to make guys miss at the line, at the point of attack, and then get extra yards after that. Lacy, in his first few years, kind of relied on hitting a bit of a hole and then either running over a guy in the secondary or beating a linebacker to a spot and getting those yards and dragging a linebacker for 3 or 4 yards. This season, it seems like he's getting bottled up right at the line, and there's nowhere for him to go, and I hope it's a blocking problem, because I have confidence in those guys on the offensive line to kind of get that together and get that fixed, and maybe once some holes start opening up, Lacy comes back to normal. But the way it looks now, the offensive line and Eddie Lacy are not gelling, and it's not being effective, and that is a problem, especially when we're having issues with receivers getting separation, getting open. I think that was a little bit less of a problem today than it was against Denver. They were blanketed all day in the Denver game. There was a little bit of room. There's some windows for Rodgers to throw into today, but the running game would be a big help to that. And if Lacy and Starks were showing the kind of effectiveness in the run game that they'd seen the last couple years, then I don't think we'd be having as much of a problem in the passing game. So it's really just a problem all over the offense. Someone's got to get it going. I think Rodgers turned it on a little bit in the second half today and was able to do some stuff, obviously nearly mounting a comeback. But it's tough to watch an offense like this that we've seen be so effective over the last few years. Rodgers has basically been able to do whatever he wants for the last handful of years, really, and now we're struggling to move the ball at all. There was a graphic early in the game today, after the first 3 or 4 drives, that outside of that one touchdown drive, it was 3 3 and outs, all of which went negative yards, and you just can't be effective like that. You can't have four drives and three of them go negative and you give the ball right back to the opposition. That's not how anybody wins games. That's not how this offense is supposed to be winning games. This offense is supposed to be effective. It's supposed to give the defense a lead to work with, and it's really just not happening over the last couple weeks.
Yeah, and we talked about that at the beginning of the season, you know, when Nelson got hurt, that, hey, there's things you can do. You can utilize James Jones, Devontae Adams. He has to be a number one receiver. And he played okay today. He certainly played a lot better than he did against Denver. He had a drop, I don't know if you call it a drop, but certainly a catchable ball in that last sequence at the end of the game there on a slant.
I think Tillman knocked that out, which he's very, very good at. But still, yeah, it hits him in the hands, and you hope he has strong enough hands to just keep that ball in his possession. But I give more credit to Tillman in that situation. But go ahead.
Sure, but I mean, what we're saying is, at the end of that conversation about the receivers was, and hey, you can run the ball with Eddie Lacy, and that was,
yeah,
you know, kind of how honestly we got through that 2012 season when Rodgers got hurt, was running the ball with Eddie Lacy. You know, backup quarterbacks, and they were, you know, other teams were not respecting the pass, and they still were able to scrape out a couple of wins and a tie against Minnesota. You know, and obviously that season, you know, ended with a home loss to San Francisco, but at the same time, they were still division champions. They still went to the playoffs. They still got another crack at the Super Bowl, which is, you know, important. And I don't want to say it's all you can ask, because it's not. When you have what you and I still believe to be the best quarterback in the league, your goal has to be the Super Bowl every year, with how important that position is. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's the most valuable position in all of sports, and it puts you, you know, at the biggest advantage if you have a great one, as opposed to basically any other position in sports. So the Super Bowl has to be the goal every year. But Eddie Lacy was supposed to be a big part of the answer to the Jordy Nelson problem, and he just hasn't been. And in fact, it's gone kind of completely the other direction. I'm with you. I don't know what it is. I don't know if he's overweight to me, and that's the easy thing because of just the way that he looks. But to me, he looked just as overweight now as he did as a rookie. I mean, there's that famous picture from training camp when he's twisting back to catch a pass, and he looks fat.
He looks like his guts hanging out.
Right, exactly.
I agree. I don't think he looks any different this year. I believe Lacy and McCarthy in saying that it's not a conditioning issue. I don't think that's the problem. I think there's something else happening. I don't know, but it's hard to tell what it is.
It's just tough, you know. And Twitter's a dark place; it really is. But you see guys, you know, questioning his effort and his conditioning, and I don't think that's the problem. He just doesn't look any different to me. And you know, I think that would honestly be a thing where if that really was a problem, I have a hard time believing that McCarthy would cover for him in the media. You know, if a coach like McCarthy is pretty dead serious about his business. So if he had a player that was habitually showing up overweight and the media asked him questions about it, I just have a hard time believing he would lie, I guess, is for lack of a better word. I just don't know what the problem is, and so my only solution is to sit him down and hope. I don't know. I don't know if this is something you can play through. It seems running back to me is such a, I don't want to say simple position, but you can see it. You've either got it or you don't, and right now they're either not able to block for him and they're able to block better for Starks' running style, or he is hurt. Something is wrong, because Eddie Lacy is a better football player than this. He was a better football player than this at Alabama. He was a better football player than this when he won Rookie of the Year, and he was certainly a better football player than this when he was such a huge part of the Packers' offense a season ago. If you want to feel good about Eddie Lacy, just go back and watch the Vikings game at home last year when he was you know, mangling Harrison Smith and Xavier Rhodes on his way to, you know, a big 100-and-some-odd-yard, 2-touchdown performance. He's a good player. I don't know what the problem is, and it's obviously concerning. But that's enough doom and gloom. This is a 6-2 football team. They're still in first in the division. Now, technically, they're tied with the Minnesota Vikings, but the Vikings have a pretty murderous schedule upcoming. In the next 5 games, I would not be shocked to see them go 1-4 or 2-3. They've got a road game out there at Oakland this week where they may or may not have Teddy Bridgewater, who may or may not have had a concussion. And so, I Oakland's good, and Minnesota is not on the road. They haven't been at any point in time during this Mike Zimmer coaching tenure, or even really the last year of Leslie Frazier either. So my concern level with the Vikings is pretty low. So let's talk about some positivity. This is still a first-place team. Obviously, 13-3 and 12-4 are still very, very much within range. And the first guy I want to talk about is our first-round pick, Demarius Randall. You and I, Ryan, were in a vehicle on the way from Milwaukee to Green Bay, desperately trying to get back to our office away from home to see the Packers pick, and we didn't quite make it there. We saw Twitter kind of leak the Demarius Randall news, and both you and I just kind of had a what the hell reaction to that. Talk a little bit about what you thought after the Randall pick and what our concerns were.
Yeah, it was a lot of silence after we found out what the pick was going to be. Kind of confused as to why that was the way that they would go, figuring that he was going to be a safety, maybe a safety hybrid corner, which we already had in Hyde. We had taken a safety the year before in Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, and we were wondering what the deal was. And obviously the deal was that Demarius Randall can play outside corner in the NFL, and he can do it at a pretty high level. It's his rookie year, and he is one of the highlights of the defense so far this season. He's been very, very good. He hasn't gotten burned, which you kind of expect to see out of a rookie corner. You expect, you know, a wily veteran like Peyton Manning last week to maybe take advantage of him to get throw a double move at him or something, or a pump fake and just make him look silly. He hasn't really done a lot of that. He has very good ball skills. He locates the ball really, really well. And for the most part, he's in really good position on the outside against whoever he's covering. And it's very nice to see. He obviously made a really a nice catch on an interception. Was able to keep his feet in bounds on the sideline. That was a huge play in the game, and it gave the Packers a better chance to win than they probably deserve to have. But he's been very good. That's 2 years in a row where Ted Thompson appears to have made a quality pick in the first round. Although Ha-Ha Clinton Dix didn't play very good today.
Yeah, today's game notwithstanding.
But for the most part, Clinton Dix has been solid as a safety in his second year. Demarius Randall appears to be a very good and a very promising player as an outside corner. It's really refreshing. He's been far better than I ever could have expected. Even once I dug into his pedigree a little bit more, obviously when we heard that he was the pick, there was confusion as to why that was a pick, a direction that.
Well, because you and I didn't scout. Because you and I didn't scout any safeties. I mean, what the hell would we have been doing?
Why are we going to take a safety?
Yeah.
And then in the first round, you take a guy with safety next to his name. But then you dig in a little bit and find out that he played corner before he got to Arizona State. He played safety out of necessity at Arizona State, and clearly Thompson knew that. He knew that the corner was was going to be Randall's best position, and it's worked out. He's been far better than I could have expected. He's answered the questions we had after losing Devon House and Tremont Williams in the offseason. I never could have imagined that he would come in and fill those shoes so admirably. It's really fun to watch. He's obviously has a bright future at this point in his career. It's fun. It's fun watching young players step up and make plays when you don't expect them to. It's a good feeling.
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, that was our big concern when the first thing we said, what are we doing? Because so far as we knew, Morgan Burnett and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix were still on the team. And then once he dug into it, he's going to play corner. And then Thompson came right out and said, no, we're going to stick him at corner. We said, all right, but how many slot corners can you have? Because as far as, general football, not 101, maybe a little bit more advanced than that, but just our understanding of how Capers defense works, if you're a safety convert, you're probably going to play the slot. If you're a guy that was deemed to have safety skills, you're going to be playing zone slot coverage and blitzing. And those are, safety traits and things that Micah Hyde does and to a lesser extent Casey Hayward does. He's more of a pure cover guy, though. He had a really nice goal line stop today. Unfortunately, that might have resulted in a concussion. But we just thought that it was a redundancy thing. And then we thought the redundancy was being redundanced, and I know that isn't a word, after they took Rollins in round two. We thought, well, he's a guy that people couldn't decide whether he was a corner or a safety, and he's going to have to play slot two. And so far as you and I know, we're not just going to play teams with guys stacked in the slot. There are outside receivers in the NFL. Turns out he was right. And we're not very smart. Randall is an exceptional outside corner. I think maybe now teams won't run the 8-yard hook because that just doesn't seem to work against him. You got Peyton Manning on that one a week ago, and you got Cam Newton on it. This one that honestly was an interception that if you would have told me we were going to get no points out of that drive, I couldn't believe it. Actually, when they went for it on 4th and 5 from the 12 or whatever it was, I was kind of irritated. I sort of wanted them to kick the field goal and kick it deep. Had they done that, it would have been 38-32 with a little less than 4 minutes left, and Green Bay had 2 timeouts. You have to hope your defense can continue to play well, but I also understand having the ball on the 12-yard line and saying, look, we can tie this thing right now. And then, the worst thing is overtime. But that's 3 weeks in a row. He's made huge, huge plays. He sealed the San Diego game. He picked off Peyton Manning. Now, that was not a glorious comeback attempt like you saw in Carolina here today. That game was over. But at the same time, you really got to appreciate a young man like him, not giving up. He was still playing hard, and Peyton threw him one there. And he made a hell of a play, and he made a hell of a play today, and I think he's going to be a good player. You saw also today on a third down scramble by Cam Newton, he went low and just made a fantastic open field tackle. I honestly shudder to think what would have happened to Sam Shields in that situation, and I have nothing against Sam, but you know what? If Randall can bring the tackling ability of a safety and continue to improve on and show this level of coverage ability, I think they found, honestly, a star, not just a solid starter. I think Randall has the chance to be a star. And maybe that's, patented Ross Uglum Packers optimism, but I've watched 6 games of him on the All-22. I could not bring myself to watch the Denver film. In the pre-production meeting, you called the Denver film a throw in the garbage, and I threw it in the virtual garbage. I have no time for that game. Just dumpster fire. It has no bearing on the rest of the season. The Packers aren't that bad. The Broncos aren't that good. But bad things happened, and that's all I'm going to leave it at. Speaking of these last two games, that puts Green Bay now at 2-2 on the road and 4-0 at home. And Tom Clements and Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy will tell you all day long, well, we want to go undefeated at home, split the road games. That puts you at 12-4. Chances are you're the number one seed. Well, actually, chances are you're generally the number two seed, having to play the NFC Championship game somewhere else. This team has to figure out a way to go 5-3 on the road. And I'm not saying that that won't happen because, I mean, maybe they only do drop the game to Arizona. They could certainly beat Detroit, Minnesota, and who's the third one? Oakland. They certainly could win the, they could win those three games on the road. In fact, they could drop one of those games and win the one in Arizona too. The Cardinals are don't look quite as good as they have all season. At the same time, you know, it's unlikely. I feel like at this point, I would predict the second half of the season to go 4-0 and 2-2, the same as the first half. Ryan, why is there such a stark contrast between how the Packers play on the road and how they play at home?
That's a big question. It's a tough one to answer. I mean, it seems too easy to just say that Rodgers is able to operate the offense without any interruptions. I mean, the crowd in Denver was obviously able to make a lot of noise, but I don't think that makes as big of a difference as we saw. I don't think that the crowd in Denver is the reason that that Rodgers, you know, has the worst game of as a professional. I think a big reason that you're seeing this, obviously there's been a discrepancy for a while now, and it's pretty common knowledge that football teams are better when they play at home. I think it's just getting exaggerated these last 2 weeks because the offense is not operating at full strength. There's something wrong with Eddie Lacy. The receivers are not, you know, for the past few weeks they had been kind of battling some nagging injuries and whatnot. I think they're finally getting healthy now.
Oh, and but, the two teams that they played are 15-1.
Right. These were two really good defenses in their own house.
Number one and two in DVOA for defense.
Correct. Denver is really, really good, and they're really, really good at shutting down receivers in man coverage. And our receivers without Jordy Nelson, with Randall Cobb maybe not at 100%, with Davante Adams in his first game after an injury, they aren't good enough to go in there and to win battles against the best pass defense in the NFL. And then Carolina comes in the next week, and they're nearly as good. They're right up there, like you said, number one and number two in DVOA. Two really good defenses on the road, back-to-back. It's a tough situation. A split was going to be a good outcome. And obviously the way that the Denver game turned out, being a complete dumpster fire, and then to come in and play the first half in Carolina as poorly as they did, that's rock bottom for this Packers team. I saw some things in the second half of this game today that give me some optimism. The receivers got some separation. Rodgers finally was able to make some plays down the field. Obviously had the big play to Cobb up the sideline. He finally took some chances. He'd been playing a little bit cautious. He wasn't throwing to guys who weren't wide open. And this receiving corps just isn't going to be completely wide open. He's not going to be able to get guys with huge windows where he can sling it with perfect confidence. He's going to have to start taking some chances. And I think you started seeing that in the second half of the game today. And I really don't think it's as big of a problem, the home-road split, as it might seem like it is at first look after these last couple weeks. This were two really good defenses that slowed down an offense that's not exactly clicking. I expect the Packers' offense to improve. I think it's going to be better. I think the Detroit Lions are in for a not very fun Sunday next week. I think there's going to be some hurt put on the Lions defense next week by this offense. But you're right. There is a discrepancy. There's something. I don't know what it is. I don't think it can be reduced down to just the fact that Rodgers and the offense get to operate when it's quieter. I think it's got to be more than that. I think it's there must be some level of comfort, whether, you know, you're in an atmosphere that you're more comfortable with. You're going into hostile atmospheres. I don't think Carolina was all that hostile today. I don't think that crowd was played that much of a difference. But
no, and actually, Cam Newton was complaining about that openly. Yeah, openly complaining about that.
The group of people I watched the game with commented that there are open seats in the end zone. You can see them right there on camera in the game. And I don't think the crowd was the difference. There's just appears to be a level of comfort playing at Lambeau Field, and maybe it's the fact that Lambeau Field and the crowd and the atmosphere is that much of a positive for this team that maybe the road woes just look a little bit worse. If I don't know, maybe I'm just talking myself in circles here, but I just don't think it's a crowd noise thing by itself. I think that plays a part in it. I think that's something to talk about with the way that Rodgers operates this offense, but I don't think that's all. That's the only thing that's making up for the discrepancy.
I agree. You know, that DVOA thing is something too, because I was looking that up before this week's game, and Green Bay played the fifth, not the team, the offense had played the fifth hardest schedule, and that was after playing the number one team, and obviously. You know, DVOA, if you don't know what it is, go over to Football Outsiders, check it out. It stands for Defensive Value Over Average. It basically takes, you know, your basic offensive statistics as far as, you know, yardage and points and that, and then gives it a weight, you know, as to who have you played. So if you played a cake schedule like the Vikings have, you don't get as much credit as if you played a really difficult schedule like Green Bay has. And they were fifth, and now after playing – the second ranked team in defensive DVOA, chances are they're gonna hop up as far as defensive strength of schedule into the top three, maybe even, you know, the top two or toughest schedule so far. And it just doesn't look like that for the rest of the season. I get that Carolina and Denver are both contenders. I think Carolina proved today that they're, so far as I can tell, the best team in the NFC, which was not something that any of us thought going into the season, just because, you know, the Dallas, Green Bay, Seattle group seemed to be so good last year and often clearly the best three teams in the conference. But right now you got to give it up to the Panthers. Ryan, let's talk a little Jake Ryan. He was a guy that we begged for after day two of the draft. We actually correctly predicted his selection as the first day three pick of the Packers. And Nate Palmer is a guy that I've never been impressed with. His pedigree is not impressive. He went to Illinois State, which is an FCS school, and I'm the last person in the world to speak badly of FCS football, but he played defensive end in a 4-3 at Illinois State, and he's a second-year pro, undrafted pro, that played defensive end in the FCS. And he's going to play inside linebacker in a Dom Capers defense? I mean, it just – the conversion from defensive end to outside linebacker to inside linebacker is not one that ever made sense for the responsibilities that inside linebackers have in this defense. And just Nate Palmer was not a player that I felt like had the requisite talent level to get it done. Could he be just a guy? Could he be benign like Brad Jones and A.J. Hawk were? Yeah, maybe, but A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones being worthless was part of the defensive problems. So what you saw today was the last drive of the second half, the coaching staff finally pulled Palmer. And this actually happened against Denver. And for whatever reason, they immediately went back to Palmer and took Ryan back out of the game. That didn't happen this time. Jake Ryan and Clay Matthews were the inside linebacker group for the duration today against Carolina after Nate Palmer got pulled. And I got to tell you, I hope that that's the case moving forward. Ryan, what did you think of Jake Ryan's play today? What did you think of him as a prospect? And do you hope he's the new inside linebacker moving forward?
I do hope he's the new guy going forward. I've seen enough of Nate Palmer to know that he's not – He doesn't have any more upside than what we've seen. He has at times looked completely lost. He's looked silly in run defense at times. He's actually been better in pass coverage than I expected him to be going into the season. But I just don't see any more upside from what we've seen. And that is not the case with Jake Ryan. Obviously, the coaching staff hadn't seen enough. You know, we're through 9 weeks of the season, 8 games, and it took this long to get Jake Ryan in at the inside linebacker spot. Obviously, it took him a little while to get comfortable. Maybe the coaching staff only did it because Palmer had been so bad and because Thomas hadn't really shown an ability to step in there at the inside linebacker spot, and they maybe made a bit of a desperation move. But you got to think that Jake Ryan's upside at inside linebacker is quite a bit higher than Nate Palmer's. He showed an ability at Michigan to be a guy who's, you know, all over the field, to be a solid run defender, to be passable in coverage. And that's what you're hoping that's what you're hoping he does now. He obviously got the chance. I think his most memorable play of the day was the kind of an open field tackle miss on Cam Newton that you know, the play ended up being challenged, and Newton was short of a first down, but you know, Jake Ryan didn't make a very decisive tackle on that play. Outside of that, he wasn't standing out in a positive way, but he also wasn't getting you know, abused in a negative way like you'd seen from Nate Palmer a number of times this season. So I'm hopeful that he's going to be the guy for the rest of the year. We're gonna see what he can do. He's a draft pick. He's a young guy. I think he has some ability, and I just want to see it happen. I think he can kind of grab that job by the reins and take it over for, you know, the next handful of years. But he just has to do it. I think he has the ability. Obviously, it's taken him longer than we had hoped. So I kind of hoped that he would be the inside linebacker from day one, but here we are in week 9, and he's finally got his shot, and I hope he just grabs it by the horns.
I do too, and I really like him as a player. I think that, you know, as he gets further and further away from his ACL tear, you know, he's going to become a better player and be the player that we first saw at Michigan, younger points in his career, where he was extremely effective. I think clearly the best player on. Maybe it wasn't a great Michigan defense. Ryan, the time that we've spent now apart on this podcast has led us to be wordy. So we're going to have to kick her in gear a little bit here and wrap this show up so it's at reasonable length. So let's hammer these next 3 points into kind of one question. Do you have a new season record prediction? Do you find it possible at all to make it to the number one seed, basically now trailing Carolina by 3 games? And do you really think this team can win the Super Bowl?
Like I said kind of right away when we started, I think 12-4 is where you end up with this team now. I don't think there's a way that you end up with the number one seed. We talked about this a little bit in the pre-show. Basically, if you assume that the Packers are going to lose one more game the rest of the way, then Carolina has to go 4-4. And I mean, maybe the Packers run the table. They go 8-0, and Carolina goes 5-3, and the Packers are the number one seed. Maybe that happens, but you know, after these 2 weeks, I don't think I can, with any confidence, say that the Packers are gonna run the table. They're gonna win out. So I think it's very unlikely that they take the number one seed into the playoffs. I think Carolina obviously has the inside track on that. Anything can happen. We're only through half the season. We'll see. But the way they're playing, I think they're absolutely legit. I think their defense is very, very good. I'm a big fan of Cam Newton. Greg Olsen is a pretty solid weapon in the passing game. And Jonathan Stewart's a legitimate tailback. I think they kind of have everything you need except for some of that wide receiver talent. But I think they're a legitimate contender. I don't see I don't see any way they go 4-4 over the second half of the season. So I think it's very unlikely that the Packers take the number one seed. But at the same time, even if they're the number two seed, even if they go 12-4, get to host that first playoff game at Lambeau Field, and if they are able to get a win, I'm not terrified of a trip back to Carolina in the NFC Championship game anywhere near as badly as I was about a trip out to Seattle last season. I think if the Packers are the number two seed, they are absolutely still a threat to go to the Super Bowl from the NFC. I don't think they're going to be held back by the two seed. I still think this team can win the Super Bowl. You look back at last season, and people wrote off the Patriots after they got taken apart by the Chiefs early in the season, and then people were writing off the Broncos offense and Peyton Manning going into the game, the Sunday night game against us last week. And things can change. Things can turn around really quickly. Tom Brady had an incredible second half of last season on his way to a Super Bowl run, and he looks like an MVP candidate this year. So you just can't make big sweeping observations like that this early in the season. There's a lot of season left. This team still has some talent. They've shown flashes in a lot of different ways, in a lot of different areas. And I do still think this team can win the Super Bowl. I think they're probably still one of the two or three best teams in the NFC. I still think they're one of the favorites to go to the Super Bowl out of the NFC. And when you get that far, you basically have a 50-50 shot. So I definitely think this team can still win the Super Bowl.
I agree. I mean, anything can happen with a hot quarterback. You saw that with Rodgers in 2010. Now, that team was good, but, Rodgers got just super, super hot in the playoffs, and especially in the Super Bowl. Green Bay won that game. You remember the Joe Flacco playoff run. Anytime you can get a bite at the apple, you certainly got a chance to win the title. As we said with Carolina, they're a good team, but they also almost just lost to Indy at home. They almost gave this game back up to us. They're not as scary of a team as Seattle was for the last 2 years. And honestly, you talk about an NFC Championship game in Carolina. Carolina is a team that I would have no qualms saying, well, what if they, what if the Cowboys get Tony Romo and Dez Bryant back and they go into Carolina? Am I convinced that Carolina wins that game? Probably not. Even a resurgent Seattle team, if they kind of backdoor their way into a wild card, if it's a rematch of last year's Seattle-Carolina playoff game, am I guaranteeing that Carolina wins that game? No. I mean, they're not the invincible one seed that I think Seattle felt like last year, where we felt that going into the NFC Championship game, it was going to take a miracle. And then, obviously you outplay the Seahawks for 58 minutes and almost go to the Super Bowl. Yeah, I do think this team's going to go 12-4. I've kind of kissed 13-3 goodbye. And honestly, Ryan, I probably should have kissed 13-3 goodbye the day that Jordy Nelson blew his knee out. Blew his knee out. That's just the amount of respect I have for Nelson. That to think that he, doesn't mean at least one game in the standings was probably incorrect. Let's talk Lions for a little bit before we wrap this thing up. You and I kind of both have the opinion on this game. I think that Caldwell has lost the team, and that might be an overrated concept, but I think it's pretty legit. I mean, I think that they're pretty cooked. Stafford looks broken as a player. He's a guy that I used to have a lot of respect for, thought he had all the talent in the world. You just keep waiting for it to happen. You're waiting for it to happen, and all of a sudden it's the seventh year of the kid's career, and it hasn't happened. So it's just not going to. Megatron, obviously, you always have a chance to lose the game with Calvin Johnson on the other side, but they've had Calvin Johnson for a number of years, and the win-loss record is not great against Green Bay. He seems to get his, but the Packers get the win. And as I said, I just don't see us losing a home game this season, and certainly not to the last-place Lions. I think this is a real
get healthy game, and I don't mean that physically, although, man, would it be nice to see some more pep in Clay's step and get back, you know, Q or Sam Shields or Hayward. Obviously, it would be great to not play without all three of those guys. You know, that would be ideal. I'm kind of hoping that Sam and Q were close, and that holding them out of this game was maybe a little bit precautionary, as opposed to, you know, them really just being that injured. I'm hoping that this second week of play or of practice is going to be enough to get them ready to go. Ryan, any thoughts on the Lions game? And then why don't you go ahead and give a score prediction, and I will as well.
Yeah, I alluded to it a little bit earlier. I think this is going to be a rough game for the Lions. I think you saw Rodgers in the offense kind of get turned up a little bit in the second half today. Rodgers looked really fired up after that big play to Cobb early in the second half, the big touchdown. I think after two rough weeks on the road, they're going to come into this game and just put a hurting on a 1-7 football team. I don't think this is going to be even close to a ball game. I really don't think the spread can get high enough for this. The Lions have been very bad. They're playing, you know, the Twitter world has said his things about, you know, the Packers playing uninspired, unemotional football the last couple of weeks. The Lions have done that all season. They have not looked good at all, and I think that's going to continue. The Packers are going to come into Lambeau. They're going to have a reeling football team come into Lambeau Field. It's going to be a big atmosphere, and I really think they're just going to get throttled. I don't think the spread on this game could be high enough. I think this is going to be huge. This is going to be a get back on track game, like you said, a get healthy game. Get everybody back in the right mindset. Get some confidence back. Get back to thinking that this can be one of the best teams in the NFL. So as far as a score prediction, I'm going to go 45-17. I think this is going to be a really big win for the Packers. They're going to put up points. Like you said, Megatron always seems to get his, you know, maybe he scores a touchdown, puts up some yards. They're able to get some points, but I think this is going to be a big win for the Packers, a get back on track game.
I agree. Right now, I'm of the school of I'll believe 40 plus points out of the Packers offense when I see it, especially, you know, without Lacy playing well and without Nelson. I got 30-17, but I agree. I mean, I don't think this one's going to be super competitive. You know, obviously, if they do lose this game, I'm absolutely pressing the panic button. I don't think it's going to happen, but if they drop three in a row and one of them's to the Lions at home, I'm going to get worried. And I kind of pride myself on my not freaking out. Guys, thanks as always for listening to the show. One thing that we would ask of you, as always, is to, if you're on iTunes or you use iTunes to subscribe to us, go to Packers Talk, leave a review, subscribe to the network. If you subscribe to the network, the most recent episode will always be automatically downloaded onto your device of choice and ready for your listening pleasure. That kind of stuff always helps us bring you the best content possible. It helps us come up higher on the list when people search Packers on iTunes. It's just a good deal to help us provide you free Packers content week after week. You can follow me. I'm at Ross Uglum on Twitter. You can follow the show at From the Benches. Ryan, where can they follow you?
I am at Hillisland358.
Thanks, everybody, and go Pack Go.
From the Benches. From the Benches.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.